Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Today on the program, we're speaking with Jennifer Wadwa, partner at 3i Law, that is a distinguished law firm known for their innovative approach across multiple legal domains, specializing in personalized client-focused solutions and dedicated to community service and social responsibility. And Jennifer, thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you so much, Eric, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we certainly are thankful that you took a moment to be with us here today. Thanks so much. Now, for starters, what is the H-1B program and why should employers even care?
The H-1B visa program is, it's been around for decades, and it really provides a pathway for employers to fill critical positions with talent from abroad when they cannot find workers who have the highly specialized skills that they need from within the U.S. workforce. And it's important for many U.S. employers because it's actually one of the more quicker pathways to hire foreign talent from abroad when you are struggling to find those workers who are already here within the United States. The H-1B visa, it authorizes temporary employment in the United States. So this is not a green card. This is work authorization in a specific type of role, generally for 3 years. They can be extended to up to 6 years. And these positions are typically for what is known as specialty occupations. And specialty occupations, it has a very specific definition in the law, but in general, what I would say is that these are occupations that require highly technical and theoretical expertise, a U.S. bachelor's degree or higher in the specific specialty or its equivalent is a minimum entry requirement for the job. And the job duties themselves must require the theoretical and practical application of a body of highly specialized knowledge. So when we talk about H-1Bs, there are actually numerous H-1B categories that we're not going to talk about today. You can even get an H-1B-3, for example, for fashion models of distinguished merit and ability. But these programs have different requirements. And so what we're really focusing on here today are the specialty occupations, because these specialty occupation H-1B visas are the most sought after temporary work visas. They are really the workhorse for hiring foreign talent, and they are the visas that most employers are trying to obtain. And so for a specialty occupation, it's important to note that there are really two pathways for H-1B visas, and that pathway depends on the nature of the employer's business. So the most common pathway is the CAP subject H-1B program, and this is important because the CAP program for fiscal year 2025, which runs from October 1st of 24 through September 30th of 25, is actually starting in the next week. And the H-1B cap is really an annual limit on the number of individuals who may be granted H-1B status. And so Congress sets this cap, and it's currently set at 65,000 visas per year. There are an additional 20,000 H-1B numbers that are available to individuals who have a master's degree from a U.S. institution. We call that the master's cap. It's really a second bite at the apple. And historically, the demand for H-1B visas each fiscal year exceeds the number of visas available. And so to address this, USCIS, they run an annual lottery each year, and it requires employers to register in advance for a specific position and a specific worker. And this lottery, it occurs in March of each year. This year, it opens at noon Eastern Standard Time on March 6th, and it closes at noon Eastern Standard Time on March 22nd. And USCIS, the agency, will notify the selectees by the end of March. And so just because an employer has had their registration selected in the lottery, it does not mean that their H-1B is approved. It's really just an invitation to apply. And employers have 90 days to submit the H-1B application, plus all of the predicate documents that are needed for successful H-1B filing. And so these are time sensitive. The second pathway, it applies to only a limited set of employers, and those would be considered CAP exempt petitions. And these types of employers, they can file H-1B petitions at any time during the year. These would include institutions of higher education, nonprofit entities that are related to or affiliated with an institution of higher education. It also applies to nonprofit research organizations, governmental research organizations, and on an individual level, it would apply also to individual workers who already have an H-1B and they've been counted against a previous cap year, and they want to take that H-1B imported for the same type of work, but with a different employer. So those are all cap-exempt H-1Bs.
Really do appreciate the complete coverage on that, and certainly some great information per the topic here today. Now, tell me also, what types of jobs and employers are a good fit for the H-1B program?
Oh, well, there are loads of positions that might qualify for an H-1B. There's no specific list, but historically, the specific roles that are typically a good fit for this program would include people working in IT as computer professionals, certainly university professors and teachers, engineers, healthcare workers, lawyers, architects, nurses, journalists and editors, psychologists, and as well as teachers. But just because a position is on, you know, the list I just provided, that doesn't mean that an employer should assume that the position that they have qualifies as a specialty occupation. Because when we look at whether a role is a specialty occupation and would be appropriate for an H-1B visa application, it is a specific legal analysis that requires evaluating the employer's job requirements, including the educational requirements and the job duties as well. So we can't just tack a bachelor's degree requirement onto a job and hope that that makes the position into a specialty occupation. There really needs to be a nexus between the degree and the position's duties. Now, as far as an employer that would be a good fit, employer size really doesn't matter. Many small employers are successful in the H-1B program. These are not just limited to, you know, large Fortune 500 companies and the like. I would say that the positions that are best for employers are the ones that they are struggling to fill with U.S. workers, and specifically those positions that require a bachelor's degree or higher. Sometimes U.S. employers have a foreign national student working in a role incident to their student status who might be graduating. Those candidates would be a good fit for an H-1B program. The other thing is that an employer who really understands that they will need to comply with significant DOL and DHS regulatory requirements if they participate in the H-1B program. And so these are beyond the usual state and federal employment wage and hour laws that regulate the workplace, because there are significant record keeping and documentation requirements that an employer needs to abide by. And it's really important that employers understand that they can't use the H-1B program or really any U.S. immigration visa program to undercut the salary and the working conditions of U.S. workers. So H-1B workers, they need to be paid, you know, the same rate as U.S. workers, and they need to be offered the same terms and conditions. So employers who understand that this program is really meant to help them fill critical positions that they just cannot fill with local U.S. workers.
Now, Jennifer, taking this even further, how does the H-1B program help employers find and retain talent? Get into that a little bit, if you would.
Sure. So in a nutshell, I would say that the program helps employers attract and retain talent because the H-1B visas are often a gateway, sort of like the test run, to evaluate if the employer would like to sponsor that individual for a green card in the future. So remember, these are temporary visas. And so individuals coming from abroad are often interested in residing permanently in the United States. And so from the employer and the employee perspective, you know, both are often considering the long-term potential for this hire beyond the H-1B visa's six-year limit. And so I think there's often this misconception that foreign nationals are maybe taking jobs from U.S. workers, but the reality is that the U.S. has experienced a labor shortage for decades, and particularly involving positions that require highly skilled workers. And that gap, that inability to find a U.S. worker with this specific education and experience, it has an impact not just on that job, but further down the employer's pipeline, right? And so economists, you know, we look at the impact of the H-1B program on the U.S. workforce, have done so for years. And the data shows really that hiring foreign talent, you know, improves the economy in many ways. So I think for some employers who are concerned about whether they would be hiring a foreign worker in lieu of a U.S. worker, I think sometimes that misunderstanding dissuades a lot of smaller employers, especially from participating in the program. But really there is, you know, if you're unable to find the worker, if in the U.S. labor market, then looking abroad to hire that talent is really a viable option through this program.
Jennifer, great to have you on to cover this. We really appreciate all the information and complete coverage here. We're speaking with Jennifer Wadwa, partner at 3i Law, that is a distinguished law firm known for their innovative approach across multiple legal domains here on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, another question for you, Jennifer. What is legal counsel's role in the H-1B process?
Sure. Ideally, and in my opinion, your legal counsel should be really providing white glove service. They should be not only holding your hand throughout the process, but guiding you, educating you on the program, and really driving the process for you. This involves not just preparing the forms and petition, but, you know, ensuring that the supporting documentation supports the petition and that the employer has met its burden. Counsel also coordinates with third-party vendors in this process because there are degree evaluations that are required. There are sometimes we need to have experience evaluation letters provided to confirm that the worker's background actually meets the requirements for the position. And really the lawyer should also, or the attorney should also be confirming that the foreign national does not have immigration history or contacts with law enforcement globally, or any negative immigration history that would prevent them from being admitted into the United States, because you know, there are many different agencies that are involved in these applications. And the last thing we want to do is to tee up a beautiful H-1B petition only to later find out at the last minute, after all the work is done and all the time is lost, that this individual is not admissible to the United States. And I would say that the attorney's role is also to really be evaluating other potential visa options that might be a better fit for the employer and for the employee, particularly if they are not selected in the H-1B program.
Yeah, great feedback there. Really do appreciate that. That is most helpful. Now, also, what are some recent changes and or trends in the H-1B program that we should be aware of?
So there were recently some changes to the registration process that were announced in January of this year, and they go into effect this week. And they're designed to limit past gamemanship in the H-1B registration process. In the past, employers could submit multiple registrations under different identification numbers for the same beneficiary, and now the agency is no longer permitting that. We've also heard quite a bit about changes to, you know, USCIS's fees. The registration fee this year will continue to be $10, but it will be going up next March, 2025, to $210. And there are also significant changes that have come through on how employers register for the H-1B lottery process. Another change is that H-1B petitions can now be filed online. Previously, they had to be filed by paper. And so that is a real big benefit for a lot of petitioners who are looking to quickly get these filed within that 90 days.
Jennifer, once again, we want to thank you for taking a moment to be with us here today on behalf of 3i Law. Before you go, in conclusion, any closing thoughts, a final word, or anything else you'd like to make mention of as we wrap things up here today?
Oh, sure. Thank you. So I would say that this is not a do-it-yourself project. There are many pieces to a successful H-1B application, and there is a lot of very outdated information online about the H-1B program, whether it's blog posts, forums, even some of the agency websites have outdated information. And so it's a really complicated filing that requires navigating Department of Labor requirements as well as USCIS requirements, and often navigating U.S. consulates abroad and what they require. At the end of the day, the individual who decides whether your foreign worker is coming into the United States is that CBP officer when the foreign national arrives at a U.S. port of entry. And that person has a lot of power to admit or deny that individual's entry into the United States. And so careless mistakes here can be very costly and can derail an otherwise successful H-1B application.
Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing those concluding remarks, and certainly a great place to conclude here today. If you would, hit that website where listeners can get more information on 3i Law and also a way to be in touch as well.
That would be our website, which is www.3ilawfirm.com.
And that's easy enough. And of course, listeners, you can draw your attention to the show notes where you can find this link for your convenience as well. Jennifer, all the best. And again, we thank you for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thank you again, Eric. It was my pleasure to be here. Have a wonderful day.
And you as well. Again, we've been speaking with Jennifer Wadwa, partner at 3i Law, that is a distinguished law firm known for their innovative approach across multiple legal domains, specializing in personalized client-focused solutions and dedicated to community service and social responsibility. And for all the details, visit 3ilawfirm.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com. This is the ePodcast Network.